Thanks a lot, Joe. And now we'll turn the floor over to Portfolio Manager Axel Merk. Axel?
Thank you, Kristen. Thank you, Joe. I'd like to welcome everybody. I would like to give you a brief overview with the little time that we have on how I see the dollar in a global context, and then talk more specifically about our mutual fund and how we position ourselves in the current crisis and how we act in the markets in the current environment. I always like to take a step back and provide the background, pretty much, how we've come to where we are, because I believe there are some misconceptions out there, and it is important to understand it, because it how we came here has an important role to play on how this may evolve in the future. In particular, as most of you know, that we've had a very significant credit expansion until early 2007. What many people don't fully appreciate is that that credit expansion continued after the Federal Reserve started raising interest rates in 2004. It was European Central Bank President Trichet who said in 2005 that when he was asked that isn't monetary policy very tight in Europe, and he said, well, not really, because credit is easily available. And what happened is that there was very little volatility in the markets. Prices didn't fluctuate much. The perceived risk in the market was very, very low. And in that sort of environment, all the risk managers at institutions, and after 2000, we had many more. We had suddenly the title of a risk manager that was in every single institution, and what they did pretty much is they looked at the volatility of their portfolios and of what the company did, and if that volatility was low, then all right, go ahead and increase the leverage, meaning borrow more money, and as you borrow money, you create money and you invest it. And what was clearly visible then is that just about every asset class was rising, and that's from stocks to commodities to bonds to real estate. And that sort of uniform rise across asset classes is not normal. It should have been a warning signal to any central bank, but the Federal Reserve allowed it to happen. And what happens when you allow the market to create the money is that then in return, when the market wants to take away that credit, that the Federal Reserve and central banks in general are less powerful, that it's far more expensive to try to fight the markets. The predecessor to Bernanke at the Federal Reserve, Greenspan, said that central banks are less influential these days, less relevant, and in that regard, it's one of the few items we agree on Greenspan, is that indeed central banks are less powerful today because the markets have taken control. The markets are able to bully Congress into passing a $700 billion package. It's Congress not in control. The Treasury is not in control. It's the markets that are driving the events of the day right now. And so what's happened since early 2007 is that volatility has come back, fear has come back, and volatility and risk are the enemies of leverage. And so what investors have to do, and by the way, when we talk about investors, it applies to just about everybody, from homeowners to hedge funds to banks, private equity firms. Everybody took out the capital, and now everybody has to position themselves more conservatively. And the way you do it is you sell off some of your assets and try to create cash, and it's like a short squeeze on cash that we have right now, and that's one of the reasons why the dollar has been doing well, because in the current phase there is a run pretty much on cash. Everybody tries to have cash. Cash is coming at a premium, and then the most prominent example a year ago was Bear Stearns, that couldn't deleverage, had illiquid collateral for its leverage bids, and had to eventually go under and be absorbed. And now this environment was initially evaluation crisis. A year ago, people talked about a liquidity crisis, and we strongly disagreed to that notion a year ago. It has changed since. But a year ago, the problem was that financial institutions were holding assets that they hadn't adjusted to market value. The collateralized debt obligations and many mortgage derivatives were on the books at far too high prices, but there was an unwillingness to sell them because it would have required the financial institutions to raise more capital, And they weren't willing to do that. And so as a result, we were very critical of the Federal Reserve's lowering of interest rates a year ago because it didn't help. What would have helped is to sell these assets, lower prices for financial institutions to go out and raise more capital. Some of that has happened. It happened too slowly. But the core difference to the European Central Bank in particular was the European Central Bank did not lower interest rates and instead just provided liquidity to the markets, which for the time was, the, in our view, the appropriate way to react to it. Now, we have since moved on and moved to a liquidity crisis because financial institutions failed to raise capital far enough. And by the way, when we've urged financial institutions to raise capital, we mean that they have to go far beyond the minimum capital requirements currently required. Currently, typically around the world, 6% of what's called Tier 1 capital is required for financial institutions. You really have to heighten that bar to about 9%. The United Kingdom is currently moving in that direction. And the reason is that the economy may very well slow down further. We may have further fallout in various areas, and there will be further losses to be written down. But what happened now in the last couple of days is that the efforts around the globe have tried to stabilize the financial system so that we don't have a global meltdown of the financial system. This is not the cure of all the problems we have. What the difference that we have today from what we had 2 weeks ago is that 2 weeks ago there was a real risk that we would have a chaotic adjustment of the prices, whereas now we can have an orderly adjustment of the prices. But people are wrong if they think that this is the end of the crisis, the end of the problem. And what we can now do is we could have, ideally we would have financial institutions that are strong enough to absorb further losses down the pipeline. And as I said, one has to be far more conservative than people are right now. Indeed, financial institutions may need to raise further capital to get to the point where we believe that they are strong enough to come what may be ahead. And in particular, I'd like to point out that the consumer, we now see it, but until a few weeks ago, we were in denial about the consumer, just as we were in denial about housing 2 years ago. Municipalities, Birmingham may file for what's called Chapter 9 very soon because they can't have access to money, but it's not just Birmingham, it's municipalities and states across the country that have problems. Housing prices haven't come down far enough. The automotive industry is in serious problems. And so the question is really, how will policymakers react to the environment? And whereas in the short term, when we had this immediate crisis of a global meltdown, there was a flight to the U.S. dollar, the question is, what is the fix to these issues? Because ultimately, these problems have originated in the U.S. And whereas the rest of the world seems to be also able to stabilize financial institutions, the further devaluation, depreciation, fallout from the crisis is mostly U.S.-centric. And so there's a real risk that the crisis going on from here may have a greater impact on the U.S. as it may have on other countries, although we have seen, of course, that the crisis in the U.S. does affect other countries as well. Joe mentioned that we'll have a significantly in excess of $1 trillion deficit coming up, and there are some that talk about as high as $2 trillion, and we agree that's quite possible. And the question is, will the market be able to absorb all the debt that is to be issued? And on the one hand, there might just be high interest rates that may be demanded by those buyers, which of course has negative implication on the mortgage market and so forth. But also, we are dependent on foreigners financing our deficits. And so the big question is, will foreigners be willing to buy that? And if not, then there is a substantial risk to the dollar. In particular, it thinks about another dimension that is currently not discussed much in public. Take the example of Argentina that is just in the news for imposing import restrictions. And the reason they do that is because in the current crisis, they say we want to protect our domestic economy from the cheap imports from Asia. Those are the same sort of things that really got the Great Depression rolling when then everybody decided to just protect the domestic economy and put up barriers to trade. And while one can sympathize with such feelings for a country that has a substantial trade and current account deficit, that may be very detrimental to the currency.